This is the podcast that we ask our guests from in front and behind the camera, how did they get their foot in the door? What was the key to unlocking their success? What's their story?
Who the hell are you?
Me? Our guest today is an actor who cannot be pigeonholed. If you're watching the video version of this episode, you'll be able to see that he is one of the few actors who can steal the show, whether it be for laughs in Game Night, or as his villainous turn in his latest role in Roadhouse. His credits include 007 No Time to Die, Into the Woods, Aladdin, Bridge of Spies, The Big Short, and arguably the best episode of Black Mirror. We chat about pulling down the facade, and does success ever feel like enough? Being scared of working with your heroes, and unintentionally being a part of the very first American Coke Baru team, known as the Rugby on Horses involving goat carcasses. Our guest today is actor Billy Magnussen.
What are you doing with my egg?
Oh, I was just admiring it. I got a bunch of these fancy pants eggs back at home in my mansion.
Uh-huh.
This one's ugly. Mm.
Does anybody know this guy?
I certainly hope so. I'm the CEO of Cyberdyne Systems.
I should go.
Boomer, take him down.
Everyone hold on a goddamn second!
Boomer!
But how...
Welcome to Elliot's.
Yeah.
What is the name of it?
Life in Film.
Life in Film, yeah, yes. Life I knew that. It's in the email.
Yeah. But it's just one of those things that you kind of... It's just fun chatting to people, you know?
Yeah. What was the one that kicked off, like, what was the movie you watched that you were like, fuck yeah, I want to go there?
Oh, mate, so many. I'm proper like...
What was the one that popped up? Was it, just be honest.
The one that really, like, got me going as a kid and, like, kind of...
Yeah, whichever one just came into your brain.
Probably something like Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, as a kid going to the cinema and going, holy shit. Like, yeah. You want to be a part of that, you know?
Are we the same age? I'm
36. I had to really think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that the acting world is... At the moment, I feel like, for me... I'm like, did you have a transition, like a moment where you were like, hang on a minute, I'm a bit older, because you still look young, but...
I think I'm there, I'm in it.
It's a funny one though, isn't it? No one warns you about it, and then suddenly like, oh, you're playing the dad now,
yeah.
And not the young.
Not yet, I haven't, well...
That's the part you need next, to play the dad.
No, I guess, not a father yet.
Mm.
But I have a project with my company, Happy Bad Bungalow, that we're putting together where I'll play it.
I was looking into this. You started that fairly recently, didn't you?
Yeah.
You've got a couple of things like lined up. Yeah, that's cool, man. I love the fact that you've gone and gone, I wanna direct, I wanna write, I wanna, you know, start other things as well.
Yeah. I think that like your entrepreneurial spirit that you seem to have as well.
This is where suddenly I put on my podcast voice.
Well, that's what I'm curious about. Like, if it's recording already, like,
yeah.
How about we challenge ourselves to be not the character?
Know? Just normal chat.
Like a normal chat, normal like two people.
That's the hope. That's what I like to do.
How do you do that? How do you drop the facade? You know,
I just try to relate to the guest. Do you know what I mean? Just be normal, like you're chatting to your mate and. It's kind of, you know, if there's bits where we just go off on a tangent, it doesn't matter because I can cut around it, edit it.
Yeah.
We slag someone off, I can cut that out. You know, so it doesn't really matter. But no, I usually do, I didn't usually start with, you know, how did it all begin? But one thing I want to ask you first, because I don't want to forget about it. Is Nomad Cowboys. I came across this.
I
need to see this.
Yeah.
Can you explain to the audience what that is?
So I had the fortunate opportunity to do a play on Broadway. It was called Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. And then I had this wonderful gentleman that I met there, Creed Garnick, who was my understudy at the time. Juilliard graduate, talented actor. We became friends, and he is from Wyoming. His family runs a playhouse in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It's a long story, sorry. We became friends. He was like, hey, come on out. I have a ranch out there. We'll ride horses. I learned riding horses doing Into the Woods, and I kind of fell in love with it. We would go out, hunt, you know, ride horses, just hang out. It was a good time. And then his father would do this cultural exchange with the U.S. Embassy and Kyrgyzstan, and like just like it's horse cultures that are just exchanging information. U.S. Embassy, sadly, his father passed away. The U.S. Embassy then came to Creed and was like, "Hey, there's this game called Kokboru. Can you put a team together?" And I was just one of the phone calls he called. He was like, "Do you want to do this thing? It's like hockey on horseback with dead goat carcasses, and you throw it in the goal." And I was like, where I was in my life, I was like, "Fuck yeah, sign me up, dude, whatever." Not realizing, like, we were going to a proper... It's like showing up to the Super Bowl and never hearing what football was, and you're playing in it.
And you're on a horse as well. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know.
And, like, what's crazy is, like, we played China, Russia, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Afghanistan was there. But, like, we didn't really understand the rules, and we're playing with, like, the local JV horses... And then they have, like, the professional horses, which are a foot taller than ours.
Oh, wow.
We have to ride these horses and speak to them in different languages because it's not our horse. Like, yeah. Like, there was, like, trrr and, like, sh was, like, stop. And one was, like, ram. It was a crazy game. Again, the point of the game is there's a dead goat carcass, which they cut the head off right before the game. You have to lean off the horse to the ground, pick this goat carcass up, weighing 80 pounds. I don't know how much that is in... It's like, 32 kilograms or something.
Quite heavy then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you lean off the horse from the ground, pick it up.
Well, you just...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But, we just documented the whole thing. We were like, this is a crazy, crazy experience. It was one of the most, but the best part of it was being like, you know, the cultural impact of it was what was exciting. You know, you are the first introduction as an American in person in this foreign land. And they're just pointing at us going, "Cowboy, cowboy." And that exchange and the camaraderie and the fun and the communication and the brotherhood that was established through it all was unbelievable.
That is such a random...
Yeah.
Also, like, because it was so random, were you like, "We need to document this"?
We do. I had to. Like, and then they went back and did 2 or 3 more years playing the game. I was like, I was done. I injured my knee.
You're like...
On it, yeah. I was like, I got a career...
That's
hopefully
amazing,
yeah.
I needed to get that in there because I saw that and I was like, "That is mental."
Yeah, it was mental. It was really mental. Like, you're the horse. It was insane. Everyone got hurt. It was the most rewarding thing, again, from the cultural exchange element.
Wow,
it was really, really cool.
We told people we were playing in the World Nomad Games, and they'd be like, "Oh, you're gonna die."
And you eat the goat. The winning team gets the goat.
After
and
you've played.
Eats it. So, like, we were the Jamaican bobsled team, this thing. And everyone, we lost every game completely. And but they invited, the other team always invited us to dinner afterwards.
Oh, nice.
And it was
when, great. When does the documentary come out?
I don't know. I'm not in charge of it. Creed's in charge of it, of it, so I don't really have
a proper answer. I saw a little bit of footage of it, and I was like, "This looks mad."
Yeah, it really is.
I'm going to look out for that one. But, to go back to what the podcast is normally about, I need to get that in there. But to ask how, I mean, you've done stage, you've done films, TV, all these different things. And I see your career, and I go, "Fuck, you've done comedy, drama, all these things. Played real people." Mm. When you started out, what was the intention? Like, did you ever believe you would be where you are now? And
wow.
Where did that love come from?
There's
a few questions.
Comment.
There.
Yeah, there's a few questions, but it also gives me pause to look at it. Where you are now. Because, like, I don't know if you ever feel it. Like, there's this, is it enough? You're always fighting. Mm. Always fighting for enough. And, you know, it's a really... As I've gotten older, I'm trying to take down the facade we were talking about. It's a very selfish industry, especially as an actor. You're always like consumed by yourself and like how can I make myself grow and whatever like that. But when I started, I guess selfishly, it was I just wanted to experience things. I was a jock. in high school, and I ripped a hamstring, and I couldn't take a gym class, so they put me in a theater class, and I had so much fun just doing it. Then I had a teacher that I thought I was going to go like a local university close to where I grew up in Georgia. And I had this teacher, a mentor, that was like, she said, go to audition for the school, not realizing it was like a massive conservatory in the States, like a highly acclaimed one. Got in, and then it kind of just snowballed, like this career, like it just fortunate. I remember when I went first time to New York City after college, it was like the showcases where you try to get agents and shit like that. And the first day I did my stuff and no one called. Not a casting director, not anything. And then the second day we did, and one guy was like, hey, I like your shit, you know? His name was Charles Bodner. And that belief and faith and support that I received from him has made all the difference in my career. He really started that just to get out there. But, sorry to answer, go back to the question you actually asked. I realized there was an opportunity with acting to learn things, because you're always putting yourself in new circumstances or situations, or looking at the world in a different perspective than your own. Mm-hmm. As you dive into a character, you know, like you just start researching and learning and discovering new things about the world out there that I never knew before, and also, you know, myself. Mm-hmm. So it's been kind of a journey of just discovering your own self-limits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mate, that's, talking about the facade and everything else, like, fair play and thanks for being honest, because that is a thing with actors and in this industry. It is kind of all about you, and it can be an ego thing, and most notably it normally is. But in terms of, yeah, I feel the same. Is it ever enough? And I've not done anywhere near as much stuff as you, but no matter what I do, the jobs I do, and it's always like, what's next, what's next, what's next?
Yeah.
And it's hard to stop and kind of appreciate what you're doing at that time or what you've got. You mentioned it slightly there, but do you have that problem where you can't stay present sometimes?
No, well, again, the funny thing about acting, or at least how I've always approached it, you do all the research for your character or whatever, but when you're there, you have to be absolutely present, which has kind of messed up my life in a weird sense, because I'm so focused on the present a lot of times that building a trajectory gets lost. I forget to be like, oh, there's an end goal. I'm just being very, very present. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I don't know. It's a mixture of the two. I'm going off on my thoughts getting a little lost, because I was interested at a point you said before. It was about pulling the facade back, the selfishness. I think, you know, coming to 40, and actually talking about that guy, Charles, I realized the greatest gifts I ever had so far in my career were support from other people and belief and, you know, helping and assistance, in a sense, a guidance or confrontation of, like, the truth. And that's kind of like the genesis of how Happy Bad Bungalow, my production company, came up. We're just artists helping artists. That's all we want to do. Is, like, I know I've learned over the years that there's shit I'm really bad at. And I'm not really bad at it, but there's other people that are brilliant and they don't have the opportunity or the space or the invitation to come and, like, shine. And, like, our company specifically is about, you know, elevating those voices or those identities. Not saying we can do it successfully, but we're giving our fucking darndest, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so weird, man, this industry. You break yourself down over and over again to, you know, Phoenix rise out of the ashes in a weird way. That is so meta shit.
I know what you mean, man, because every part changes you a little bit. You take a little piece from everything you do.
Or does it take it from you?
Yeah.
There is a depletion I have felt over the years. And I've had, you know, the fortunate opportunity to have a steady career. Mm-hmm. But yeah, every project takes just a little out of you. And
yeah, 100%. I don't want to make this about me, but
no,
it's
please.
My personal experience with a role that I had to lose 2 stone for. And I was the weight I am now.
Yeah.
So I got really, really thin. I got to like just under 9 stone. It was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And it affected me for like 2.5 years afterwards. And, you know, that was just part of the way I did it. I didn't do it very... I probably should have had someone to help me do it, but...
Yeah. What did you do? Did you just stop eating?
No, I just didn't eat carbs for a long time, and then the film got delayed, and I was exercising, was running, and doing all these things, and the character was meant to be a dancer, so I was trained to dance at the same time, and I was doing all these things, and I got really, really thin, to the point where I was too thin. I ended up even breaking my hand and my wrist, I think 2 weeks before doing the film.
Fuck.
And so I didn't want to tell anyone. My hand was in a cast, and I thought, if I tell them, I'm going to get fucked. I'm the lead in this film. They're just going to, you know, find someone else. And this was 2 years of waiting for this film to happen. And low-budget independent film, I thought, I just can't tell them. So I remember going to the dance lessons, having to take
it off
and just pretend it was fine and obviously not do anything where I was putting my weight. And it was just, after doing that film, the kind of, you know, what it's like when you've got a project and you think, oh, this is going to be the one that's going to help me get the next one. I didn't work for 2 years because the film was delayed and all this stuff. And it was the come down afterwards. That film really took it took a chunk out of me. And it was like years of recouping. Have you experienced like doing a role where, you know, I really kind of affected me mentally. So I had like depression after that. And I got better once I got another role and I could move on from it. Yeah. Did you ever have a problem like shaking roles sometimes when you've got so deep into them that you kind of, it's hard to get rid of that?
Yeah, of course. Like there's voices that
you're like every time.
Every time. Shut up in my head. You know, it's always going off. It's tough to shut it off. I was talking to a castmate of mine last night. You ever hear this guy, Daniel Brühl? He's a great guy, Spanish-German guy, fantastic actor. But he was talking to some of his other mates.
Is he in Rush?
Yes, guy from Rush.
He's great.
But a great guy. And him and some other actors, and they were having a conversation, you know, that every 5 years something shows up for you. In the interim, you got to go hunt. But going back to, pieces that go away with you or they take away from you or stick with you. Yeah, they all stick with me to a point. Do you ever do the thing where you're lying in bed at night and you go, why the fuck did I do it that way?
A year later.
All the time.
Even from auditions or sometimes I'm like muttering my lines that I've just done. I know I'm not going back in unless I get a call back. And you're muttering, you're like, shut the fuck up. What are you doing? Like,
but you're training yourself. You're torturing yourself. That's the problem. Like you are, especially people that like really put the effort in. You are changing yourself on levels that are deep, deep, deep. Mm. And like I don't think people understand that. Or I think the talented people or people that really take this seriously, because it is an art form. And I actually, when I was in my 20s, I didn't think it was an art form. I was like, you just fucking say your lines, you fucking hang it, you know. And then I slowly, like, again, having the opportunity to work with some beautiful people, and there's a change. You shift in mentality, and there's a change in physicality. There's a change in spirit that happens with each project, and I don't know if you can shake it, but I think it sharpens you too as a person. You even become more specific as yourself, you know.
Definitely. I think it's, I think as well over the years, the more different parts you do, obviously just life experience as well.
Yeah.
It all adds to the next thing you do and it's kind of a build up, isn't it?
Yeah.
This sounds really pretentious, but...
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I just don't know, like, to be honest, like still I'm like out here doing a project right now and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing next after that.
Yeah.
Like that's what's crazy. It's like, I'm still like... Well then, I guess I don't have a career after this job. Yeah. You know, it's like, what do I do next?
But I love that you've said that, because a lot of people like myself will look at you thinking you're working all the time and he's got all these things lined up, because you do have a career that people look at and go, "Fuck, you've done a bit of everything."
That's so I'm like flattered that you say that.
And I'm not just saying that, yeah. Genuinely, because there's people that come on the podcast that I don't know much about, but I genuinely followed your career, and I'm a big fan, so like that is genuine. I'm not just like...
Thanks so much.
Up. I'm British, I don't blow smoke, you know what I mean, unless I want to. But yeah, no.
Do you know, like, it's so funny, maybe this is like, I probably need therapy for it, but like you say that, and like, for me, in my head, I still am like... Fuck, I haven't done anything. Figured it out yet. Yeah. I still feel that kid in New York at 20, 21 going to like an audition being like, God, I hope I make it. It's still in my head that way. Mm. It's weird. I don't know if that's like... Come on, you have to have that. You've worked nonstop as well, and you go, what the...
It's one of those things that I think everyone thinks you're working when you're most people are working, you know, what, 20% of the time?
Yeah.
But do you not find... Do you still get nervous when you go... Obviously, you said there are auditions and stuff. When you get on set and you've prepped and you know what you're doing, but do you still get those nerves when you get on set and you're like,
a new character that... Who was I talking to? Burns. Burns, now I can't think of his first name. Burns. He played my father in Maniac. Burns. He's Irish, right?
I know who you mean. I've got his face in my head. I'll do a little image.
Of you need the Google for the second brain. But anyway, he calls it like the first day of school, and he was just like, even him still, he's like, I'm nervous. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, it freaks you out. Yeah, 100%. I just did a project, Lilo and Stitch, live action, and I play an alien with inside my body, basically.
Take a piece of that one. That'll fuck you up.
Yeah, and then, but, like, I'm coming to the first day of shooting with crazy ideas. Like, crazy ideas. Yeah. Character, the voice, all the whole thing, and you're like, well, I get... That insecurity was like the first time doing it in front of people. I'm going to commit and see what happens. They kept it, but yeah, you just, they kept it. No one was like, you're going to do it that way.
So that's the actual way.
So when we shoot, that's how you're going to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I always think, you know, you think of like Heath Ledger and the Joker.
Yeah.
When he's playing the Joker, and you just think the first day of him doing that, he's obviously incredible, but he must have been like, this is a big swing, do you know what I mean? Like, everyone thinks that, and then it becomes iconic, so it's...
Yeah,
but then they must be the ones that miss.
Yeah,
just don't see them.
Think about all the projects you like or hate, like... Yeah, I want to just see something exciting, because it is an art form. Again, going back to that, like, realizing it is something of an art form, and to, like, transcend yourself in a way, it's really cool. Or it's actually could be both verticals. You can transcend yourself, but also go deeper into yourself and uncover some other part of yourself that you were unaware that was there, and put that vulnerability out there. Mm.
It's therapy.
Mm. It is crazy.
When you think of the actual definition of an actor as well, it's absolutely mental. Yeah. It is a crazy, crazy job. And do you, I mean, I love you, like, in, like, the comedies that you've done, Game Night, just fucking, it's probably, I was listening to the Smartless podcast the other day.
Yeah.
And obviously Jason Bateman, who's in the film with you, he and the other guys were talking about that film, and they were talking about your performance and saying how great it was. And and one of them,
really?
Yeah. It was in the episode with Sam Rockwell, which came out a couple of weeks ago, I think, or maybe... Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
And I was listening to this yesterday, just before, you know, obviously that was going to be on me, so I was like, oh, that's cool. But they were chatting about it, and one of them, I can't remember who said it, wouldn't it be Jason Bateman, but he was like, that film is one of the last great comedies of that type.
Yeah.
And I agree. Like, I was saying it to my girlfriend, we watched it a couple of weeks ago randomly. Yeah. I was like, there hasn't been a film, like a full-on comedy like that, that has just blown the doors off life. Fucking love that film. I think it's so good.
It was something, you know, Jonathan Goldstein and John Daly, you know, you give credit there, the directors and stuff. They're fantastic. And great. They're just so funny, those guys. Yeah, I think the problem with comedy nowadays is, you know, in the social media era, like, it's hot lava everywhere. Mm-hmm. You have to be so careful socially or anything, or you can't comment on anything. And, like, I don't know. I feel society... you know what's funny? Like, one-on-one, humor still exists around the world, but, like, in a public forum, it's dead. Like, we can't laugh anymore. Mm. You know, and I'm not saying, like, to belittle anyone or do anything like that, but also, you can take the piss out of someone. Like, it's okay. Mm. And I don't know why we can't do it anymore. But I think that's one of the reasons. That comedy wasn't... It wasn't mean. I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of had a little bit of everyone, but it was character driven. It was grounded in story. It was a fun adventure. It was
just very well written as well. Just clever. And how much of that was improvised? Was a lot of that in the script, or did you kind of were able to play with it?
You know, a lot of it was in the script, but then at the same time, working with, again, like as an actor or producer or director, like, you only hope, or I do, I only hope to work with people that are collaborative. Again, a script is an invitation, in my opinion, it's an invitation to collaborate. Mm. And once it becomes very stuck and people don't want to move things, and they, like, not everyone's right. You know, a collaboration is the key, and I hope to keep working with people that are open to improvising or talking about a scene, developing it deeper. Like, the best idea should always win on a project.
100%.
Yeah. It was a lot of improv, a lot of fun, but yeah, it was a lot on the page. Mm. You know, Sharon Horgan's awesome. I love that woman so much.
So funny. I saw an interview with you guys, and where you just couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, I remember when we were doing those interviews, like, we were playing a game that we had to get a weird word into the interview. So I would pick a word for her, she would pick a word for me. And I don't remember what the word was she said or I told her to say. And I don't think we could keep it together because it was just like the hardest word to get into an interview.
I'll have to rewatch it now with that in mind and figure out what the word was.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of that film. But you mentioned they're obviously collaborating, and because you've got your own production company and your film, The Ridge, which you've written and directed, I believe.
Yeah, written, I will direct with
Mandela. You will, so it's coming. It's something you've done.
The first two films we've done, actually, so Fyphon Pictures, 360 Entertainment, Austin and Joey, the directors, Coup is the name of the film. COUP.
Apostrophe. Yeah.
It's Peter Sarsgaard. I can't even say his name. Peter Sarsgaard and I, Sarah Godin, you know, it's like a satirical kind of thriller period piece that is our first film with the production company. We premiered in Venice last year, which was really, really great. And then it comes out in June in the States, which I'm like so proud of this thing. And like, again, like the entertainment world has changed because of streaming so much. It's either you have a mega film that's like $100 million or you have a film that's $2 million, which is so hard to get off the ground. And our film there is like, with the budget we did this film Coup, I'm so proud of everything we achieved in it.
The amazing cast,
it's amazing. I mean, but it's, the story's fun. That's why it's funny, like, people can read a script and be like, hell yeah. Again, it was an invitation to collaborate, and everyone knew there's something exciting there, you know? So that was the first one. We just wrapped our second one called Violent Ends, which was directed by John Michael Powell, who started in the industry as a editor, actually. He edited a film I did years ago. But yeah, this is his sophomore directing project, and... it was in Arkansas. Do you know where Arkansas is?
I mean, I've heard of it. It's probably in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful part of the country. Yeah, it was. But like, you know, as an actor, I've said this quote before. You know, I as an actor, I am a color in someone else's palette. Mm. I can be the best blue I can be, but all I can be is blue. Moving into producing and directing and writing and all that stuff, you start holding the palette and you get to be the painter. You know, and I want to invite, you know, multiple people to paint this picture together. That's been the change. It was just like I was craving a little more, I guess, taking down the veil. Control is the wrong word, but like artistic liberty, artistic freedom, artistic collaboration. I was craving that more. But sometimes in these bigger films, you are just, you know, a hired mercenary.
Yeah.
You do your job and get out. Yeah.
Well, just having that,
which is great too. Don't get me wrong.
But having that involvement, and it must be really fulfilling to, you know, a script that you've written, and then you're going to go and direct it. It must be terrifying as well. Is that the first thing that you've directed yourself?
The Ridge. Oh, The Ridge. No, I haven't even directed it yet. No, I've directed some shorts that we have done at Happy Bad Bungalow. But this will be my premiere, like, feature directorial debut.
Is that nerve-wracking?
No, it's... You know what? Like, what I've found, what I believe... People are in this industry because they love what they do. Give them the space and liberty to solve it themselves. You know, your job as a director is to steer the ship. That doesn't mean I have to pull every anchor up. I don't have to, like, do the masts and all that. Like, I just have to be able to coordinate everything in such a way and give it a concrete answer. And that's what drives me crazy when you work with a director where you're just like, do you have a vision or not? You know, like, and if you don't, that's fine. Let's collaborate and think about it. So that challenge doesn't bother me because I'm going to be working with people that I want to work with putting a film together. Be like, hey, do you want to be a part of this? If I like them, like, let's collaborate and make something fun. It's even through the creative process of building the script and with the producers, pulling the cast on, like, I think it's all fun. Like, this industry, we're not curing anything, you know? It's not... I've noticed the smoother things go is because it naturally flows and fits into it, and you should listen to that rhythm. It doesn't need to be as complicated or hurt.
It should be fun.
And once it's not, like... And that's... I've always found that interesting when you work with creatives or directors where you do, like, 30 takes of this one shot and you're like, it's not working. Let's move on. Let's do something else. Like... That's the famous story from Jaws. Don't show the shark. The shark wasn't working, so don't show it. And what happened?
It made the film.
That was like, yeah. Learn from that. There's a reason the energy's not moving that way. Redirect it.
100%. I think that's great, man. Like the fact you've got your own production company and you've got all these strings to your bow. That's awesome, man. It's my dream.
Then do it.
Well, I'm writing scripts, so I'm trying.
Yeah.
It's knowing how to get it in front of the right people to, you know, get it greenlit and to get that collaboration going. And this has only just come to me now, but in terms of your production company, how would someone get a script on your... I mean, this can be just for me. But like,
I invite you to do the same thing. Like, the whole purpose, like I said, is artists helping artists. If I can be advantageous or helpful in someone else's process of getting something made, I would absolutely help. There's also times where I go, I can't do anything with that. I really just can't. It's not... But I would like to be a portal or a bridge for artists. You just, you know, Happy Bad Bungalow. Just Google it, you know? And, like, the truth is, if we are into it and we feel we can be collaborative and advantageous, we'll reach out, you know? We'll reach back.
It's hard to know, isn't it? Because this is obviously a bit for me now, but, again, taking the veil down, but it's hard to know you know, you put a treatment together or you send them a part of the script or the whole script, and it's, people haven't got time, you know, they haven't got time to read a necessarily whole script. So it's kind of, I'm in a learning process, do you know what I mean?
But again, yes and no. Listen, come on. If you prioritize what's important to you, you have time. There's a lot of times in this industry people say that you're a priority, but you're not. And I don't know, man. That's the reality. This industry is a hype industry. It's a real hype industry. And hype is fake. You know, I think somewhere, again, with... And, like, I'm bashing social media, I guess. Number count? Like count? Whatever.
On IMDb and things like
that? No, I was just talking...
Oh, like followers on...
Yeah. That doesn't equate to a talent.
Apparently it does now, though.
But it doesn't. We know that. We know it doesn't. Like, we all know it doesn't. And that's what's crazy, I think, sometimes. I'm not saying I'm fucking most talented. Just be clear. I'm just saying, to recognize views or likes or all that doesn't always equate to a talent, especially in a specific field, I guess. Because it could translate to anything. Yeah, you know.
That is the scary thing, though. It feels like just in the time that I've been acting since I was 19, it's changed so much, and as you say, social media really has influenced it a lot. And sometimes I go to an audition and you see the people in the room, you're like, I know that person, I know. And then you do get the sense sometimes that they've chosen the person with the most followers or like the YouTuber or like, and that's something that never used to be a thing, and now it does feel like that.
I see, because I think the idea, again, like the entertainment industry has been taken hostage by, let's say, the tech industry. And not saying there aren't creatives in the tech industry, but an algorithm doesn't tell you how you feel. And I think we forgot how to really touch what's inside sometimes, or address what you feel rather than just numbers. But no, and some reason I think people believe if you have a lot of followers that you'll have a huge outreach, but I just don't think it works. You can't equate it. There's definitely, we've seen films that people, we know big films that people are hired because they're followers, and it doesn't translate.
Check out the Patreon at patreon.com/lifeinfilm, where you'll get episodes early and uncut, amongst other treats. And don't forget to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us a positive rating. Add us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Life in Film Pod, and find our video episodes on YouTube by searching Elliot James Langridge Life in Film. Essentially, please like and subscribe everything. It makes a huge difference. Thank you. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you work in the film industry? Are you freelance? Or perhaps you have a 9-to-5? No matter what you do, mental health affects us all. I struggled early on in my career with the uncertainty of if and when I would ever work again, struggling to pay my bills, or simply with anxiety. Don't know about you, but being an actor, it's very important for me to maintain structure in the downtimes, and I found not only exercise, but talking to someone, for me, was a game changer. And so Life in Film has partnered with BetterHelp to provide you with access to the largest online therapy service in the world. And it can all be done from the comfort of your own home, from a phone, tablet, or laptop. No commute, cutting down travel costs, and most importantly, it's affordable. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. If you need someone to talk to and you're thinking of giving therapy a go, BetterHelp is a great option. And being a listener of the podcast, you get 10% off. That's 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lifeinfilm. That's betterhelp.com/lifeinfilm.
And back to the show. And I want to geek out a little bit.
Let's geek.
Because I'm a massive fan of the original Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Huge fan. So when I heard they were doing this, I was a bit nervous. I was like, please don't fuck this up.
It's fucking awesome.
Is it? Oh, mate, I'm so excited.
It's the most non-Hollywood Hollywood movie.
Amazing. I've ever seen. Amazing.
It is just, it's just fucking awesome.
Once Knox is on the job, it's over, baby.
It takes a lot to get me angry, but when I am, I just can't let go.
People seem a little aggressive around here.
I heard the director say it was his best film, which blows my fucking mind because he's done some great films.
I mean, Day After Tomorrow, like,
yeah.
Live, Die, Repeat.
What, yes, it had another name though, didn't it?
Yeah, well, that, yeah. That one, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, he did Swingers, like, yeah, he's...
So many, Born Identity.
Yeah, like, Doug Liman we're talking about.
Yeah. For the audience.
Who is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome guy. I would work with him in a heartbeat again.
I'm so glad that it's...
Yeah.
Because I watched the trailer, I was like, fuck, this is going to be great. And I was like, please be good. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it, man. And are you playing like it looks like you're a bit of a villain in this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're allowed to say it, but...
Yeah, why not? Yeah, it's going to be it's a movie.
Yeah.
I play this character, Ben Brandt, who is trying to take down the Roadhouse. Mm. And nice. I am, quote unquote, the bad guy.
Yeah,
the bad guy.
I love that though. I love that you can go from, you know, playing comedic roles to complete villains. Like, is there a thing that you like to do? Like, what? Because when I first saw you in Game Night, I was like, this guy's a comedian. He's fucking hilarious. Yeah. But then I saw you in like something else, and I was like, hang on, I'm confused. This guy can do. He can do drama. And you know, like obviously the Sopranos movie, and like just all these different performances. Now that I've seen, I'm like, oh fuck, you can't pigeonhole this guy. This guy can do anything.
That has been a specific choice I made.
Yeah, I love that. Like, so that you have done on purpose and you've chosen.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, I could have gone the other route where you just kind of like play the same card over and over again. Again, my invitation. Into, let's say, the real movie world. Well, Game Night was probably like the top tier. Yes, I was into the Woods, and I did theater and stuff like that.
Which is fucking hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
That scene with you and Chris Pine is one of the best. When you're singing at each other and you're getting more annoyed. And you're like,
everyone's like, when they find out I was into the Woods, they're like, who are you? I was like, not Chris Pine.
The other prince.
Literally, that was my character's name. The other prince.
Yeah, I saw that on IMDb.
No, but when Game Night came up, it was the first opportunity where I got like above a certain number on the call sheet. And I remember my manager's husband tell me, like, Bill, just go throw your fucking fastball and show everyone you can do. And that was some of the greatest advice I ever got. Just go fucking throw your fastball.
Yeah, man.
But then that led into an opportunity. Like, right after that, I got asked to do these other comedies or stuff like that. And I was like, no.
Mm.
No, because...
Bravely.
It is.
Fair play.
Yeah, I knew I didn't want to just be that guy.
Mm.
And I feel like that doesn't sustain a career. So I wanted to be very specific about changing the
power of no, right?
Yeah,
that is something that hopefully works.
Hopefully
it
works.
It seems to work for you, so
yeah, it is crazy. But oh, I wanted to make a point. I think I've said this before too, but you know, comedy guy, villain, you know, straight guy, like every character always is the hero in their own story. So you're never the villain is the hero in his head. Mm. You always have to play it that way.
Mm.
And I think that's it. I try to bring that to everything I do. Is like everyone thinks they're doing the right thing, even when it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're doing the right thing, which I think grounds things.
100%. Yeah, you're not the... the example, obviously, like... Some films are like old school James Bond villains and stuff. You're like, love it, but like not.
I'm petting an air cat right now.
Yeah. And I feel like you did that intentionally in Aladdin, though. But that's fucking genius. Like, as in the character is like almost a cat. Well, he's a stereotypical sort of not a villain, but he's like stereotypical prince. Like, and I just thought that was a beautiful performance.
Thanks, man.
And you're like, I was thinking you were in that film way more than you were.
30 seconds.
And I rewatched it, and I was like, that's the main thing I remember. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the absolute epitome of stealing a scene. Like, yeah, man, it looks like you're having so much fun, like, with these roles. Mate, I appreciate your honesty, though, because people are going to listen to this and they're going to be like, fair fucking play. Like, you've done all these great things, but you're also still looking for the next thing. And being honest that, you know, there isn't something around the corner and it's still grinding and you've got to work hard for it.
Yeah, I know, but, like, the thing I'm trying to confront is the peace with that. Mm. Just being, like... It's funny, it's I look back on projects 10 years ago and now I appreciate them so much more than when I was doing them. It's really wild to look back and go...
That's good, though. At least you appreciate them. It's not like it's got worse with age.
No, no. It's also, like, when around, like, 30, when I turned 30, it's like when game night started happening or something like that. Mm. I was like, oh, shit, my career started. And then I looked back and I was like, oh, no, I've been in it.
You're in it, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a sense of, like, oh, I'm allowed to be proud of these things that brought me to this moment. I'm allowed to. There's something in also I feel in this industry that, I mean, you've come across it. Like, when you compliment other people, you compliment me, and there's, like, you have to suppress. Yeah, you have to suppress it weirdly, socially, instead of going, like, thanks. Mm. Yeah. I really tried hard. Mm. I tried hard.
I thought that was a British thing. So you, obviously, I mean, you said it before, but you do feel that. You kind of feel a bit like, thanks, but... Like,
yeah, why is that? Why can't we actually...
Protecting yourself, perhaps?
I guess. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think it's like...
I mean, I totally get what you're saying. I do the same thing. Yeah.
But it's like, if we don't... maybe it's protecting also ourselves from the negative feedback. If we don't take the positive feedback... Mm. That means we can also not take the negative feedback, so we're just safe. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't read a review.
Don't read a review.
That does make sense.
But we all do.
I just I want to wrap it. I will start to wrap it up. But in terms of
how have you found to do the structure of this shit? Like, honestly, what has been the key to structuring it? Like, when you say wrap it up, like.
Well, no, when I start to wrap it up, it's like there's a few questions that I always, like, safe questions that, not safe questions, but, like, I have, like, what's your most embarrassing moment? Do you have a funny story that you can tell? Something like that. And I kind of know then that we're kind of winding it down, but really it's still just a chat. The whole thing is just, and if, you know, if I am a fan of the person, which I am of you, then it comes naturally because I know the work you've done. I don't have to have done much homework on it. And I want it to be as natural as possible, and I think I feel like we have been honest with each other and just chatted pretty plainly, really. But sometimes it can be more forced. So I kind of just take it as it comes, really.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not comparing myself to Joe Rogan, but like he just has conversations. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah.
I feel less of an interview and more of a just like let's just chat. Like what happened? What was bad? What was good? And that was hard. You know, kind of.
I know there's people that I am not good at this. Like have these stories that are in their back pocket and they're, you know, like it seems like there's a lot of there. And I commend people that do that, but have curated stories that they know the punchlines, they know the things. I don't operate that way.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I suppose with actors as well, there is that element of performance. You know, when you're being interviewed or if you're on stage or if you're whatever.
Oh, man. I remember I auditioned for one of the late night shows. I had an audition to be a guest on the show. And I didn't get the audition.
Wow.
Yeah, because I guess I couldn't hold a story or, like, entertain for a segment or some shit like that.
That's mad.
Yeah.
It's such a weird concept, but...
Yeah.
I feel like acting is... It's such a hard industry, and you know I've struggled with in between work. I kind of go a little bit mad, and that's why I started this podcast. It was, you know, something I said before. It's like keeps me sane in between. Is that something that?
Is there anything with it that, like, because you're an actor, that this is the time you don't act, like you get to be yourself?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, and you're not necessarily. Well, it depends who the guest is, but you're not hiding.
Yeah.
Yeah, I the more honest and sort of the more you get from it, I think. Yeah. Like I buzz off chatting to people that are, you know, whether they'd be behind the camera or in front of it. It's just, I just love film, so I get a buzz going just chatting to people about it, and it's, yeah, I just really enjoy it. Whether or not the guest does. It's all about me at the end of the day.
There it is.
So, you know.
Enjoy it.
But
who's been your favourite guest on your show?
Fuck. I've done...
Who was it? What popped in your head? Come on.
Genuinely no one.
Like, just, I hate them all.
I hate all of those bastards. There's been a couple of ones where I thought they were going to be really good because I'm big fans of them, and then it's been a bit short and sharp, and ones like that, they pop into my head a bit more. But then, like, surprises, like I had an actress called Sophie Wilde, who's did you see the film Talk to Me, the horror film?
No.
It's an Australian horror film, fairly low budget, but it's done really, really well. Yeah. And she's phenomenal in it, man. Really? She's fucking great. And I wrote off to her representation. I was just like, I've just seen this film and I need to speak to this person.
Yeah.
And she's just been nominated for the BAFTA Rising Star Awards, I thought. But yeah, she came on and she was just like you, just really down to earth, just chatting and honest, like, you know, it's fucking hard. Sometimes things go wrong. You make a big swing and it doesn't work out. And
yeah.
She was great. She was really great. But yeah, it's usually the ones you're more familiar with that I get more nervous and I'm like,
Yeah. And, I still do too when you're like working across someone, you're like, I've known your career for 40, or not 40 years, but like 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, shit.
Do you ever like...
Yes.
When you're doing... I mean, you've worked with Meryl Streep, all these fucking monsters.
Yeah! You get fucking scared. Especially when I was young, working with her, like... Yeah, again, at the end of the day, everyone's just people, and, you know, they poop, too, so it's like...
Yeah, you got to remember that.
You got to remember
that. Don't think about it too much when you're doing a scene, but... Because I had a scene with Michael Caine, the British Don of, you know, of English acting, and I realised when we were doing the rehearsal, I just froze, because I was looking at him going, oh, I'm not watching you, I'm not watching TV, I'm here, I'm actually... And that was the only moment I had, but it was like something I was like, fuck, I need to like...
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal, isn't it, if you're...
So much. I think...
What? What were you going to say, and now you're going to...
No, I auditioning for someone like that. Mm. I remember auditioning for a very big time director. Like, this was... So pandemic happened... I had an audition for something in 2 years, and it was like the first in-person audition in two years. And I'm in front of, if I say the biggest director that I haven't worked with yet.
Not Spielberg, then.
Yeah. The biggest director.
Okay.
And...
Scorsese?
No, not that one. No, that one.
Hang on, wait, you did Boardwalk Empire, though, so...
He wasn't. He didn't direct any of that. But I'm in person doing this, and me and this other well-known actor now... Actually, it was a room of, like, all these people I know, these actors and shit like that. I'm so nervous auditioning, whatever. Me and this other actor, too, are there. The movie has come out, and we realized, me and this other guy, who's very well-known now as well, we were the only two not cast in the movie from that audition room in that space. Yeah, I wish I could give detail. I don't know if I'm allowed to.
I'm gonna try and find this out. Yeah. I don't know how, but
yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, that's, you were in the fucking room in the first place, which is like hats off.
But the nerves, just still being in front of them, like, I haven't auditioned in 2 years because of the pandemic, and now I'm like, oh god damn it. What? Mm. Yeah.
I've got a little story about not anything as high level as that, but something where I went into an audition for a commercial. 2 years or so with the pandemic, having not worked and having not auditioned, having not worked as well, I think, at the time. And I essentially went to the toilet before I was going into the audition room. And the toilet stall didn't... I've told this before, so I'm going to have to cut this out. But I went into the toilet stall. It didn't have a lock on it, so the door was kind of swinging open. And I just thought, it's fine, I was peeing. Someone came in, and then I kind of thought, oh, and I tried to close the door. Didn't realise I had literally... pissed all down. I had light jeans on.
No!
All down to my knee, like this, genuinely. I've got the picture somewhere, I'll have to like send it to the manager and go, just show him this, he'll understand. But yeah, it was all the way down to my knee, and I just looked at it and I just went,
I'm fucked.
Fuck, am I gonna do?
I'm fucked.
And the only way to get out of there was to walk through all the people waiting to go in. There was no other way out. I was in the basement toilet. I was like, there's not even a fucking window I can climb out. Like, there's nothing I can do. I was like, I am fucked.
And there's not like a blow dryer thing.
There was no blow dryer, but there was in the women's toilet because I could fucking hear it. And I'm in the men's toilet going, do I go into the women's and try and like, oh, it's just a fucking nightmare. I'm like putting like wads of tissue trying to dry it up.
Wait, yeah, you get old too. It starts dribbling a lot more.
Oh man, it was a fucking, in the end, I just went, fuck it. And I just got the sink going and I just fucking, I wetted the whole trouser. So the whole...
Smart!
Yeah.
Well done!
The whole trouser was the same colour. So I had to literally like make sure the whole thing, and I'm looking in the mirror going, yeah, these people came in and I'm there going, they're looking at me and I'm like, oh fuck, doesn't matter.
Did you get the job?
No. Like, I went into the room and it was kind of drying unequally. So the patch was kind of somehow still there.
Yeah.
And there's a big light, like, you know, down there. And she's like, can you do your hands and stuff? And I'm like this, because I'm trying to pull my shirt over it. And I'm going like this. She's like, up to your face. And I'm like, it was just fucking nightmare, man. And that was the first time after 2 years of being in the room. And I was like, went well then. My girlfriend messaged me like, how did it go? Just sent her, because I took a picture of it when it happened. Because I was like, no one's going to believe the extent of how bad this is. And I just sent her the picture of my, like... And she was like, oh, what happened? And I was just like, oh,
sorry. Yeah, well, but, what do you want for dinner, honey?
Please. But, you know, so we've all had embarrassing moments.
Yeah.
Mate, honestly, this has been a real... Thanks for taking the time.
Cheers.
It's been great, mate.
Cheers.
Thanks, man.
Thank you to our guest, Billy, and Narrative PR. And thank you to the team at Future Artists Entertainment. As always, thank you to our sponsor, BetterHelp. If you'd like to hear more from the cast of Roadhouse, seek out our Roadhouse special episode on YouTube from Friday.